This is Jeff Davis with the Alignment Podcast, where we explore sales and marketing alignment strategy for B2B businesses. Make sure to visit jeffdavis2.com for all things alignment. Now let's talk about how to create togetherness.
Today's guest is Anthony Iannarino, professional speaker, best-selling author, sales leader, and entrepreneur. He is best known for his work at thesalesblog.com and has been recognized as a thought leader in sales strategy. In today's conversation, we discuss how B2B businesses have to adapt to today's nonlinear buying process, the top things sales leaders should be asking for from marketing to help them close more deals, and how alignment leads to higher value sales conversations, which are necessary to get the attention of prospects today. With that said, let's jump into the episode. Anthony, hello, how are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you today?
I'm doing very well. With you being recognized as a thought leader in sales strategy, I'm really excited to pick your brain to help sales leaders better understand why alignment is necessary and the things they should be asking for to support the success of their sales teams.
Okay.
So with that said, would you tell our listeners a little bit about your background in case they don't know who you are? And then why is sales and marketing alignment so important to you and what it means to you?
I'm a professional speaker and an author, a sales leader and an entrepreneur. I have multiple businesses. I publish a blog post every day at thesalesblog.com. And I also have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/Iannarino. I spend a lot of time with salespeople and I do some work with companies that give me sort of an insight into where sales and marketing tend to be disaligned. Why I think it's important is that the client acquisition process has changed dramatically. And we talk about buyer's journeys and sales processes and things like this. And my probably biggest insight of the last couple of years has been just how nonlinear both of those processes now are. So we have this concept and we start talking about sales and marketing and we put a sales process on a PowerPoint slide, and it starts at the left side with target and it ends with close. And we know that that's not really what the client's thinking about what we're doing. And so we say, you know what we should do? We should match it up with the buyer's journey, and that will make everything better. And then you look at it and you go, yeah, but their journey's not linear either. It doesn't start on the left side of a page and end on the right side of the page as much as we want it to. And as much as we can look at a zero moment to truth and all the kinds of concepts that have come out of this, it's just nonlinear. And that means that there are things that move from what does the box say to what are the values and what are we trying to do? And I think when sales and marketing are disaligned and we're not having a conversation about how do we serve people where we find them, how do we help them think through this so that we can have a process in this discussion that allows us to create the case for change, which is most important. And then how do we get them to make the commitments that they need to do something about it and support that kind of a conversation? I don't see much conversation from either side right now about what we need to do to be able to serve the client where we find them. Mostly it's more about us. It's either more about us on the sales side and that we want to jam them into this process that we have. We're going to do discovery. We're going to give them a solution. We're going to present. And we want to make that go as fast as possible. Or it's from the marketing side, and we say, this is what we think about where the buyer is. And we don't really do a very good job of aligning those two things, which is why you've started a whole podcast around this, right? You're like, yes, I know this. I've seen this before.
Very true. So I want to get more into the new proposed or whatever you want to call it, sales funnel in a second. But I want to dive a little bit deeper to help us understand how the buyer has changed and why that is significant to the B2B space.
I'm not sure that the buyer has changed. I want to be careful with that. People have always bought when they're dissatisfied. I'm not getting a result that I want, so I have to start looking to do something different here. And I maybe define a problem worth solving. That's still true. If I had to pick the change that's been most interesting to me over the last, let's call it the last 8 or 9 years, it's this recognition that the buyer's not dissatisfied and they're okay with the status quo. And in addition to that, even if they are dissatisfied, it's so difficult to make a decision inside an organization where the decision is complex. There's tons of stakeholders. I don't want to give you what you want because you're making my job harder for me, even though we're on the same team. If we make this decision and it doesn't work, we're spending money that we may not have. And is it the right decision? And I see so many B2B sales organizations from the buying side, but or from the selling side, but I get to see their buying process. And it's very difficult for them to decide what is most important right now. What should we be investing in? And when it's difficult for people to come together and align their decision-making, they just decide to do nothing. So I think the biggest challenge for sales and marketing together is, I would tell you 20 years ago, the discovery process was a discovery process that said, Jeff, tell me where you're challenged right now. Tell me what's keeping you up at night. Tell me where you need to produce better results. And you would have said, well, here's the kind of things I'm thinking about right now. And we would have started a process of a sales engagement there on your discovery session that pulled out the dissatisfaction. And that's the way we talked about it. But now when I show up, well, I am dissatisfied, but I'm not really willing to do anything about it right now because of this factor and that factor. And so the why change, the ability to come and initiate that change, and instead of saying, I'm trying to discover something about you, I have to come in and say, Jeff, here are the three or four things that we're concerned about right now and some of the decisions that you're going to be forced to make over the next 18 to 24 months. And here's some ideas about why you should think about changing now instead of later, and what the risk to you is if you don't change. This is a different form of discovery. I'm now causing you to discover something about yourself and about your business and about your decisions. And I think that this has been the most important and dramatic shift I've seen. Even more important than the internet and the fact that we can go out and search for information now.
So really, organizations in the B2B space nowadays should be really asking their prospects, why change, and demonstrating what that looks like versus kind of the old model from what I'm hearing you say of just trying to understand what's going on with your business, et cetera.
I'd frame it this way. Instead of saying what's keeping you up at night, I'm going to come in and say, this is what should be keeping you up at night.
Okay. And that is a dramatic shift because it takes a deeper level of understanding of the prospect's business to be able to really talk to them about what they should be concerned about versus asking what they're concerned about.
Right. That's right. I'll just share this with you. I continually tease sales audiences with, and now everybody's going to hear this and they'll know before I even say it. You only need two things to be a trusted advisor: trust and advice. And when you're missing the advice part, you're not a trusted advisor. It's just very difficult to be consultative without having the deep business knowledge.
Interesting. So that makes me think, okay, so let's continue with that theme. So that then has implications on training organizations, because if you want your salespeople to be trusted advisors, but they don't have the level of knowledge, understanding of the business, how can they achieve that?
That's right. They need the experiences that give them what I call business acumen and situational knowledge. What's going on in their business? What does that mean to them? How do they think about these things? How do they talk about them? Because I have to be conversational there.
Mm-hmm. And who should be educating the sellers? Is that a sales training thing, or is that a marketing giving insights from what's going on? Like, how do you download that information into a seller's brain?
Yeah, I'm going to give you sort of a frame for this that I use. I think that there are four levels of value that B2B organizations create. The first level is the value of the product or service. And I call that level one. It's important, but it's not most important. And ultimately, that's why people with inferior products can still sell well, is because the product needs to be good, but it's not the entire story. The second level of value is experience. So it's the support and the services around that allow you to do better work with the product or service that's being sold. Level three is the business outcome. So the ROI, tangible results. We've been commoditized at level three for a long time. What's changed is now that we're charged with helping answer the question, why should I change? Why should I change now? How should I change? What kind of trade-offs do I have to be willing to make? What kind of change is necessary inside my organization to be able to respond to what's going on outside in the outside world? That's a level four question. That's a strategic question. And to sell from that place, from the level four, I have to know things that you don't know, or I have to have concepts or ideas or opinions about those things that I can share with you. So the challenge, I think, for marketing now, and this will probably be the punchline for this whole thing and my conversation with you, Jeff, is that if I were to take a traditional B2B business that sells any kind of a product or service, and I were to stack their marketing material up on a table, there'd be a massive stack of level one. You want product, you want spec sheets, you want sales pages, you want catalogs, you want any of that. We've got all of it. And then level two, service and support and all of the marketing material that would serve a sales force would be a much, much smaller stack of papers. Level three, there'd be some case studies and white papers for sure, but there would be almost nothing that's level four. There would be very, very little that speaks exactly to here's what's going on in your world. Here's our understanding of it. Here's the decisions that you're going to be faced with. Here are the internal changes that you're going to make in your company to be able to enable this kind of thing. So the Salesforce doesn't have a lot of level four content. And when you think about teaching them how to have these conversations, there's been this great argument going on LinkedIn as to whether or not it's important to read books and if you can learn to sell from a book. And you can't learn to sell by reading a book, but you can get a hell of a lot better at selling by reading a book. So we need to give them the experiences, the experiential learning, because that's where you're going to get what I call situational knowledge. But marketing has a role in this to say, what are the trends and the ideas that the sales force should be aware of? How do we think about these things? What are our views and values? And then how do we enable them to go out and have this conversation and help them help people decide to leave the status quo for something that's scary and risky, but necessary now?
Yeah. So I've heard conversations going back to your earlier point that we started talking about this non-linear sales process. And people have proposed or talked about the fact that the traditional sales funnel may not be as relevant or relevant at all. And that we really should be moving to this continuous customer engagement model. And so they're saying the four phases are find, engage, close, grow, because nowadays more and more B2B businesses are acting like subscription model businesses. What are your thoughts about that? Do we need to change the sales funnel? How do you see that?
What a sales funnel or a sales process or a buying journey is, in my view, is what we would call an orienting generalization. And I think orienting generalizations are useful. And I think if you have something that's useful and the model works, then it tells you a lot. But I've told salespeople and sales organizations for a long time, the process or this model is a roadmap, but it's more a GPS than it is a roadmap. Because at some point in the find, engage, close, and grow model, if that's one you like, there's this point where you get to a conversation with a client where the GPS says, Jeff, I'm sorry, but turn-by-turn directions are no longer available here. and you're like, okay, so that means I'm lost. Yeah. So what do I do? And I think that the range of things that happen work more like find, engage, two new stakeholders enter the conversation. Now I need to engage them. Okay, the company was just bought by somebody. A company that we had no idea was even interested in buying them. Now I have to engage with a different group. There's just all these factors and all these things that happen. So I think that the important thing is to have some sort of a map in front of you so you can say, where am I? And then what are some of my choices? But a lot of the case, because selling is a dynamic, complex human interaction, you also have to understand that there are so many variables. There's no way that they're going to fit into a model with four stages. And even however detailed you want to make the four stages, it just can't capture every variable. Yeah. So we need to, I like the idea of a continuous customer engagement model. And I like the idea of having some big boxes drawn around certain things that have to happen in stages. But I think it's going to require us to all be a lot more thoughtful, number one, and way more agile, which means I have to deal with the situation in front of me now to be able to make something happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree 100%. I want to get back to this idea of what does sales benefit from the alignment effort? I think a lot of sales executives, in theory, may like the alignment idea, but there is a handoff between driving sales, making sure that their team is engaging with prospects, and also dedicating the time that it takes to potentially invest in this alignment effort. So
There was a report done by Laura Ramos. She's a VP and principal analyst over at Forrester. She called it the B2B CMO's new role in sales enablement. And what I liked that she brought out was she asked CMOs, what are the most important things that you can offer sales to help them be successful? And so I want to share with you the top five that she found in that report and get your thoughts on.
I'm already fascinated.
I want to see, do you agree? And I want to continue to have a conversation to let sales folks know why or how do you leverage marketing in a way that makes sense for your business. So
okay.
Number one, she said, increase the productivity of the customer or opportunity acquisition. Number two, target the right accounts and help sales pursue them. Number three, develop the right content to increase brand awareness. Number four was supply sales with tools to frame conversations in customer terms. And then number five, she said, bring customers together to explore topics and educate them. Your thoughts?
I love the first point, and I will tell you, I see two kinds of organizations in this particular area. There are some organizations that believe marketing's job is to generate leads, and it always troubles me when I see that. And that's because a lead is a name and a phone number, and now because somebody went out to a website and gave us their name and phone number and email address, they say, I acquired a lead. And you didn't. You acquired a name and a phone number. And it is not a lead. It's just a name and a phone number.
Yeah.
So I think this concept, and this has been exactly my point, and I've written about it on the blog a number of times, marketing is really engaged in opportunity acquisition. And if that was the main focus and it's point number one, I'm in total agreement. This is our job, is to acquire new opportunities, not leads.
Yeah.
I think the idea of targeting the right accounts is critical. And I think that especially in B2B, where I'm going to pursue what I call dream clients, I'm going to need a methodology and a plan to say, I'm going to end up calling on these people over a long period of time to win their business. So I like that one. There's this little challenge I have with the concept here. The third one is the right content for brand awareness. I don't like that. And I don't like it because it doesn't speak to opportunity creation. It speaks to, do you know who we are? Do you think we're the right kind of people to do business with? Do we have some sort of aligned values? I want the right content to create opportunities. I want the right content to say, here's why you should be changing now. Here's why it's important that you do something different. Because the opportunity acquisition starts when you compel change. And recognizing the brand is useful, but it's not the most useful. The most useful thing is to have some case for change, in my opinion. That's just one person's opinion.
Yeah. So as a marketer, so let's play devil's advocate a little bit. If, as a marketer, I might say, well, the content that we're creating to increase brand awareness is a way for you to get in the door, because the more recognized our brand is, potentially, the higher likelihood that someone will at least listen to you. What are your thoughts about that?
I think that the brand awareness is helpful, but if I had a choice of saying, I'll just give you my personal view of this. Mm-hmm. If I had the choice of having a slide deck that doesn't have the company's logo on it anywhere, and you don't even know where it came from, but it speaks to exactly the dissonance that you're experiencing right now and explains to you, wait, this is why I'm not getting the results I need. These are the challenges that are going to make this even more difficult over time. And here's some of the things that I need to start thinking about to do something different. I'd take the deck without the brand on it.
Fair enough.
I'd take the deck that spoke to the reason to change as a salesperson. As a salesperson, it's more important that the content serve. I need to change the lens that the client's looking through. They've got one lens. I'm going to take that lens away and I'm going to give them a new lens. And if I'm the person that gives them the new lens, and I'm controlling the frame, then I'm much happier because that's going to allow me to create the opportunity faster.
Yeah, got it.
Give me the fourth one again.
So fourth was supply sales with tools to frame conversations in customer terms.
Yeah, and there is the second challenge I have with this. And that is, this is going to be an interesting thing for me to say, and I'll let you give me whatever feedback you want. If the customer knew how to frame their problem right, and they knew what they needed to do to solve it, they would have already solved it. And if the competitors that are already working with that customer knew how to solve their problem and had the right concept and terms for it, then they would already have solved it too. So my challenge with that and the way that it's framed anyway, and I haven't read the report, I'd be interested in getting a copy of it.
Yeah.
I may have to install a new frame and give them new terms and new concepts to talk about the problem they have in a way that allows it to be a problem worth solving, where we can go ahead and decide that there is something that makes sense to do to change the situation. So I worry about something that says we need to talk about it in the terms that they talk about it, maybe, or maybe we never need to give them a new language or a new vocabulary to understand it and explain the dissonance that they're feeling. And I don't know that their terms are always the right terms.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I think there is something to say about meeting people where they are in order to bridge them to something new. And so I think if you come into a space where they have this language or this lens, kind of to your point, what you said earlier, and you're completely, and it could work either way, but you're completely different than what they're used to talking about or look, we're used to seeing of it.
Yeah.
They may just shut down and say, like, this is too much. We can't take all this in. We don't want to engage with you. But if you at least meet them where they are and then take them on a journey to get to where they need to be, I feel like sometimes that is a more compelling argument. And I think that might be where that's getting to, you know,
could be,
you know, just, I mean, for instance, like, let's say we talk to different verticals, we talk to medical, technology, manufacturing, industrial products. We can't have the same vocabulary for each one of those opportunities because they're used to hearing it in different terms.
Okay.
So I think adapting that message to make sense with the company or whoever we're calling on so that they hear what they're used to get them in. And then I love what you said earlier, and then giving them a new lens to look at it differently.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. And I haven't read it, but I'm just, I'm riffing on that here because I do think sometimes we pay too much respect to the idea that the customer has this concept of their own.
Yeah.
And the concept's not helpful for them. But I do think you're right. You meet them where they are. And wherever they are, you have to, and I say it a different way, you play the ball where it lies. You don't get to decide that I need them to be over here. You pick them up where they are and you help move them forward and you help them swap out the lens.
Yeah. The visual you gave me literally is meeting them where they are and then giving them a new lens and saying, let's move forward. I think that encapsulates kind of what we talked about. And then last but not least, because we're a little short on time, it was bring customers together to explore topics and then educate them.
I think that's one of the most important concepts of all of these is you are now in the role in sales and marketing, both of helping to educate your clients as to what's possible, what they should be concerned about. And I'm not sure that marketing in a lot of organizations, and you know, that's it's a bell curve, right? There are some people who are really good. I've seen people and companies that I've spoken to where the stack of their level 4 content is massive. I mean, they totally get it. They're educating. They're talking about their views and values and why change. And they really, really have it down. It makes it very easy for their sales force. And of course, there are laggards who are just far behind and still want the spec sheet and the product to do all the work, not recognizing how commoditized their business is and how little that does to help the sales force actually create a case for change and create those opportunities.
And it's especially in a commoditized business, I think a lot of people miss the opportunity that it is one thing to have marketing put together an educational program and it be promotional versus salespeople coming together. It just feels different to a prospect. Whereas when they come to a marketing program, it feels educational.
Right.
I'm not promotion to it, but if you're coming to a sales event, even if you're trying to be, you know, not so salesy, like the just assumption where you're starting from, people are probably going to come in to be resistant because they know it's a sales pitch.
Right.
Marketing can kind of get away with that a little bit because they're like, we're not here to sell you. We're here to educate you and have you see things in a different way. So I think we miss leveraging the marketing team in order to really open the conversation, get feedback, and then educate potential prospects.
Agreed.
Yeah. So with that, because we're a little short on time and I want to make sure I get this last point in. In your mind, what is the one thing or theme you would share with executives, both on the sales and marketing side, as they go into this journey of alignment? What should they keep top of mind throughout the whole process?
I mean, the points that you gave me from, I think it was Forrester you said, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's about opportunity acquisition. And I think creating the opportunity first means that you need to have the whole Salesforce and marketing team both aligned around how do we educate our prospective clients around what's coming in the future and why they should start changing now. And how should they be thinking about that so that they can do something different? And I love the concept of just thinking about the lens, is that marketing helps develop that lens and then hands that lens to the sales force to go out and say, here's a new lens to look at this problem through, and here's the result and what you're going to see on the other side of this that you don't see now. And I don't think that there's enough attention paid to, is marketing enabling the sales force to have this conversation? Because the spec sheets and the catalogs and our company history and all of our location and the brand awareness just doesn't create opportunities anymore.
Yep. Couldn't agree more. Well, Anthony, with that, I want to thank you for your time. I think that people are going to get a lot out of our conversation and what you shared with them. So hopefully you'll be back on in the future.
Thanks for having me, Jeff. I appreciate it and appreciate you getting up on a Saturday morning to do this.
Not a problem at all. That's how passionate I'm about fixing this.
Thanks for listening to the episode. Don't forget to visit me at jeffdavis2.com and follow me on Twitter at jeff_davis2. Did today's conversation resonate with you? Then share with your colleagues to help the Alignment Podcast grow. Join us for the next episode where we continue to talk about how to create togetherness.